Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head. Attitude, bitch.
July 15th, 2019. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Raw Reaction here on the ChairShot Radio Network. I am your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst. Unfortunately, we are still waiting on the arrival of the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero. But as we talked about in the last two episodes here of the Reaction, we have a little bit of a change in the family. Andrew Balazs, the line in the sand, is going to be stepping away in order to focus on covering New Japan's G1 Climax for thechairshot.com. Those shows usually run at about 5 a.m. in the morning Eastern Standard Time. Andrew lives in New Jersey. So he is going to be taking some time off from the show. Hopefully he'll be back afterwards, which will probably be right around the end of SummerSlam, and he will be coming back. But filling in for Andrew in the interim, easy for me to say, is my former SmackDown Live to the Max co-host, the co-hostess with the mostest, Miss Liz Puglisi. Good evening, Liz.
Good evening, Harry. How are you? Hello, everyone.
And right as I introduce Liz, there's the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero.
What up, bitches?
Hello.
What's going on, Tony? How was your weekend, man?
Busy. A lot of work. I spent most of today cleaning a keg room out, and I don't assume that you guys know what that's like, but it's hell. So.
I assume very heavy.
Yeah. There's a lot, you know, and you, regardless of how neat you try to be, you end up smelling like alcohol when you leave. Beer, not the good stuff, just straight beer.
Well, I was going to say, usually you smelling like alcohol is a Tuesday.
Yeah, well.
All right, so unfortunately, Tony had some internet issues this evening and was unable to watch Monday Night Raw. However, Tony did have a chance to watch the Extreme Rules pay-per-view, and I believe you said you got to watch Evolve as well, Tony?
No, I didn't watch Evolve. I was kidding with not knowing what it was about, but I was unable to watch it.
You suck. All right, so then what we'll do is we'll open with a conversation about the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. Tony can get his spiel in, and then hopefully Tony's internet behaves itself next Monday, and he can become a reoccurring part of the process again.
Yeah.
All right, so let's open how we usually do on a pay-per-view Monday. This is your final reaction for the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. I know it's been a while, Liz, since you've done one of these episodes. So to reiterate to you and possibly first-time listeners as well, the final reaction is your favorite match or moment, your least favorite match or moment, which we've officially dubbed the Greg Watchery, your overall show rating, and your MVP, your most valuable player. Tony, favorite match or moment at Extreme Rules?
so this is probably going to be no surprise, but Cesaro and Aleister Black. Cesaro is just, like, if I were gay, I'd blow him because the dude deserves every possible pleasure, like, everything he wants in life, and who doesn't want a blowjob? He's just amazing. I mean, keep in mind, this is Aleister Black. He's, like, 8'13", and Cesaro's picking him up like he's fucking nothing, like I pick up my nephew. Aside from that, it was an amazing match that wasn't too long. It wasn't too short. It was, man, it's just like, it, of course the right guy won, but, man, I just wish they would give Cesaro a chance. Is it the nipples? Is it because
that's
of his nipples?
Cool.
Possibly. Although, with Paul taking over as creative director for Monday Night Raw, I wouldn't be surprised to see Cesaro definitely in line for more opportunities, even though he really didn't get to show a whole lot in the Battle Royal tonight. Liz, favorite match or moment from Extreme Rules for you?
It's actually the same one, Aleister and Cesaro. Harry pretty much knows my love of all things Cesaro, so. I was late to the NXT, you know, game, so I wasn't always on the Aleister bandwagon, and I wasn't too sold on the whole come knock on my door, you know, stuff that they were doing. But I really hope they go I really hope they go somewhere with this, and I thought it was a great first match for the two of them. Really highlighted some of their strengths. Physical strength, and definitely the right man won. So I hope it's not just a one-shot deal. I hope we see some more of it.
So would you watch a Aleister Black-led Three's Company remake?
Yeah, that'd be terrible.
That's
well. I feel like it would. I feel like it would star Zelina Vega as well. So therefore, I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
I'm actually going to go with the SmackDown Tag Team title match, and specifically Big E firing the fuck up. Where's that Big E been the last 3 years? Holy hell. Overall, the SmackDown Tag title match was really good. I don't necessarily know if I like Bryan and Rowan dropping the tag team titles, but if this means Bryan's going to be reintegrated into the main event scene over on SmackDown where he is desperately needed, then I'm okay with it. As far as Big E and Xavier being the SmackDown Tag Team Champions go, my only concern is who do you really have on SmackDown to put up against them as a heel team right now, with Nakamura and Rusev having been broken up and the Revival having been shipped over to Monday Night Raw.
Harry, you brought up a good thing that I probably totally would have forgot to have mentioned with regards to Big E and the way he basically hulked up. I talk a lot about how easy it is to make a superstar and how the WWE always makes it look so difficult. Dude, in like 37 seconds, Big E became Big E. Like, you believed for a second that that man belongs in the main event. And I mean, how hard was that? It was an amazing moment. It wasn't just, you know, us three that saw it or anybody in the IWC. That moment right there is something that you've never seen before from Big E, first of all. And secondly, that immediately just gave him intense credibility. Aside from the reality that he's got bigger tits than all three of us combined, the dude, like, just screams fucking superstar, and he hasn't until that moment. I don't know. It was beautiful to see, but it was upsetting to realize that's how easy it is, and they never do it.
Greg Watry, Tony.
Oh, Brock. For sure, Brock. You know, it's unfortunate because when you look at it from a business standpoint, it makes sense. You signed this guy to a multi-year contract. You got to fucking use him. You have SummerSlam coming up, and you need a big name. But the decision to make him champion again, just the way – I mean, and also he has a briefcase. He's got to get rid of it somehow. You know, so I get all the reasons why, and I won't argue against them because I understand them. But, you know, a lot of people say the money is in the chase. It's not in the chase if you've already seen the chase. You know what I mean? It's not interesting. Anybody facing Brock isn't interesting. I mean, you're looking at a Big Hoss battle of Braun. That's not interesting because they made it uninteresting. You want a a workhorse, you know, in there like Cesaro, it's a little more interesting, but ultimately nobody's going to believe that he's going to beat Brock, and it's not a SummerSlam match. When you look at the names of that were in the Battle Royal, without, you know, spoiling who won, because I don't know, no one in there is believable outside of one or two, and the one or two that are believable, we've already seen it in some way, shape, or form, and I'm just not interested. It's just the Brock winning just kind of, at the end of the pay-per-view, it wasn't a big old throw the remote in the air moment. It was just like, all right, well, here we go, and that's it. And I hate feeling that way. I want to be excited about Monday. I want to be excited about next week. I wanted to be excited about the ultimate result of the pay-per-view. So everything as far as match-wise, I think the pay-per-view was pretty good wrestling-wise. But the stories leading into it and the stories that came out of it just kind of deflated everything, including and especially Brock Lesnar. Man, I was not happy.
Liz, same question. Greg Watchery, least favorite match or moment?
I don't know. Let me think really quickly. I didn't like hate the pay-per-view. I like really enjoyed a lot of it. So, least favorite match. Okay, so my least favorite match was probably actually the, even though it was good for what it was, I can't completely knock the match. The Roman Taker Shane, you know, Drew one. I think I was just, and solely because I was not, I had no interest in the match as much as I like all four men, you know, individually. I have, you know, I don't like the Shane character. I had like no vested interest in it, so it didn't really do anything for me. So it wasn't a big, by any standards of, you know, Taker being too old to really be in the ring. I just, it was my least favorite match. I really had no, I keep dropping my phone, sorry, no whatsoever. That's my very short answer, because that's all I have for you on that. Actually, I didn't really dislike anything, so I can't really tear anything apart.
I don't think there were any bad matches overall on the show, but the one match that I did have the biggest issue with was the Last Man Standing match, just because of that whole attitude error brawling through the crowd shtick that they did to waste most of the time in that match. The finishing spot in the match was cool, I'll give them that much. The power slam off balcony through the staging was cool, but other than that, it just felt like a crowd brawling. I didn't especially care for any of it.
Yeah, you know, there was a lot wrong with the rules of Extreme Rules. You know, like for instance, a no-holds-barred match where people are following the rules. Or the main event, where basically it was Extreme Rules, but you saw people tagging in and out. The only time we saw a guy hit a girl was when Baron Corbin did his thing. And, you know, there's a lot of just, like, it's one of those things where we talked about where if you're going to have a pay-per-view with a name like that and you're going to have matches with specific rules, you can't really ignore the obvious, and I noticed they did that a lot last night, too.
So to the rule makers, I say,
take the fist.
Still one of my favorite sound bites. Scale of 1 to 10, Tony.
I think it's an easy 7. Like I said before, I even tweeted it. So you cannot deny the wrestling quality that we saw last night. The tag match was super sick. I mean, again, I think it was another one of those star-making performances. Otis and Homeboy had not really proven anything, and yet I think they got the most time in this match to show what they, you know, their skills. And then, of course, Big E doing his moment. Then you look at Cesaro and Aleister Black, which could have went anyway, and it went the right way. So, and then every other match that I didn't talk about was good to, you know, good to really good. So I can't knock them as far as the skills in the ring. It's just everything leading to it. And one could say that this is, you know, this was the stopping point before we get to the new writers and whatnot. But I don't know. I don't think it's going to be an immediate change. I think it'll be a gradual one. And this kind of proved it.
You could definitely see Heyman and Bischoff's influence on this, even if it is Vince making the final calls, though.
Liz, scale of 1 to 10.
I'm going to go 7.5 because the last few pay-per-views I actually really enjoyed. I think all the matches were pretty solid. There wasn't any really bad wrestling. Fighting in, the different spots and some stupid, goofy crap or whatever. But I don't really be interested. Just this 7 months of the year alone. So just for the fact that it kept me pretty interested and we had a serious amount of solid wrestling, and even the women's match, which I generally do not care about, I thought it was really good and interesting. So just for that, I'm going to go a little bit higher with the 7.5.
I'm actually higher than both of you at an 8.5.
Wow.
Don't get me wrong. I don't like the fact that Brock is once again the Universal Champion, and it's not because it's not because I dislike Brock, even though I do. I just feel like there's more story to be told with Seth as champion that doesn't involve him having to be basically cucked by Becky Lynch. I think that there's a different story that could have been told with Lesnar and the Money in the Bank briefcase that doesn't rely on him having to be around here. I get that you're heading to SummerSlam and the biggest pay-per-view of the summer, and it's a selling point to the pay-per-view buyers internationally that may not be able to subscribe to the network that have to still go the more traditional. I mean, Brock Lesnar's a draw for pay-per-view buyers. I get that. But at the same time, I think there's more story to be told with Seth Rollins than there is with Brock Lesnar. We've kind of seen, like Tony mentioned earlier, what it is that Brock is capable of. Other than that, though, as far as the matches and everything else goes, I have absolutely no complaints about the in-ring content last night. I thought it was one of the better pay-per-views in a very long time, and in my opinion, and I do believe this is the highest score I've given a show this year. This is the best pay-per-view of 2019. Almost said 2018 out of habit. Who's your MVP, Tony?
Shit, me? I'm going to say Cesaro. There was a tie between him and Big E.
Of course you are.
They stood out big time. And, with reason. It's just, I don't know. Those are the moments, man. Those are the ones where if you don't capitalize on it, you're kind of a dumbass. I like that they put Big E in the main event. I don't know how much of a presence he was because I haven't seen it yet. But it's kind of hard to ride that way considering he's a tag team champion, so he's a part of a team. But I don't know. I just that moment is one where when you see it, you have to springboard off of that. It's like when a TV show lands on a character who's really, really good, and then they, drive it into the ground. But there's that small little period of time where it's just amazing. And if they were to capitalize on Big E in that moment that they created, damn. But I'm going with consistency here, and Cesaro has never, ever, ever disappointed me. Like, son of a bitch. That match was so good.
Damn!
Yes.
Liz, MVP.
I'm going to choose someone from my second favorite match. If I just don't think he gets enough credit, and I'm going to go with Drew Gulak. It's pretty close to actually being my favorite match, Drew and Tony. He's just solid. I don't think he really gets enough credit. In some ways, I can see why. I don't think his personality wise maybe clicks with a lot of people or stuff. But and that was, I think he's really on. In that match, they had some amazing, back and forth. I love the new vicious, kind of style he has. And I'm really hoping it starts to lead him to bigger things. I don't really know what's going on with 205, if it's really going to last much longer. But I think Drew has the potential to keep stepping up his game. So he is my MVP for that.
I really disliked the Cruiserweight match, and a lot of it had to do with the fact that I think Tony Nese had an off night.
I thought that Gulak carried that match, which is kind of what Drew does. Drew's a badass. But I thought that Tony was had an off night, and the match suffered for it. My MVP is actually going to go to all four men in the opening tag match. Shane McMahon, Roman Reigns, The Undertaker, and Drew McIntyre, because that match was way better than it had any right to be. Undertaker looked motivated. McIntyre looked focused. Roman Reigns looked like he was up for it. And Shane McMahon put in arguably his best effort in the ring this year. Anything to add, Tony?
Hi, Liz.
Hi.
I believe this is the first time we've had a show together. I don't remember doing a show with you, so this is a little bit of a teaser because I'm leaving, but I'm looking forward to it. You sound like a very positive wrestling fan. That always goes well against my very negative outlook. So, yeah, we'll be talking next week.
Okay, great.
All right, Tony, hit your line.
Deuces, bitches. Enjoy. Bye.
Yeah, as mentioned, Tony unfortunately had some internet issues. Therefore, he is not going to join us for Raw itself. But we will be speaking to Tony about Monday Night Raw next week here. And I definitely want to get Tony's thoughts on something that Liz and I will be covering in further detail here shortly. But before we get to Monday Night Raw, Liz, you got an opportunity to watch Evolve, correct?
Did I watch all of Raw? Yes, I did.
What did you think? Like, we don't have to do, like, we're not going to do, like, a final reaction for it or anything there. I just want to get your overall thoughts on the product. Is it something that if it were on the network consistently, would you watch it?
If Raw was on the WWE Network, would I tune in? Is that what you're asking?
Evolve.
Oh, Evolve. Yes, I said Raw. I apologize. I did watch all of Evolve, and yes, if it was on the network, I would tune in religiously to it. Would I watch it necessarily as soon as it aired? No, but I don't watch most things as soon as it's aired, so you can't hold that against what I'm saying. But yes, I would definitely watch it. I actually really enjoyed it, and I'm going to be honest, in many ways I'm a horrible wrestling fan. There's quite a few people on there that I was very vaguely familiar with, and I thought it was a very solid show.
Me, the Evolve show was kind of surreal. Because there were a couple of people on that show that I never, ever in a million years thought would get an opportunity on the WWE Network. And I am specifically looking at one of my favorite wrestlers ever in Eddie Kingston, who not only got an opportunity to perform on the WWE Network, actually had promo time on the WWE Network as well. I thought King had an excellent accounting for himself, and I'm really, really hoping that this is the beginning of more to come for Eddie because he deserves it. There is not a harder working guy in this business. Still with me, Liz?
Yes. It's staticky. You know what it is? I have this, I'm holding my phone and I have this stupid pop thing on the back of it that's actually for some reason making it hard to hold. I was curious when you said the word surreal, but as my late night brain kicks in, I think that's the perfect word to describe it because you're absolutely right. Like I said, you know, there's some people, a lot of people that I was only vaguely familiar with, and, you know, shame on me, but I think pretty much every match, and I'm not going to call anybody out because I'm not familiar, you know, enough with them really to be like, oh, I didn't like, you know, so-and-so. I can't do that on a, you know, first night of really seeing, you know, everybody that I don't know anything about. I'm not that type of fan of a person, but yeah, I'm dead on about Kingston. He is someone that I am more familiar with on the show, minus of course the guys from WWE who are actually on the show. And you're right. You really wouldn't think that's something that would ever happen, and it definitely deserves it. And I would love to see him, really get a shot with the company. From that would be absolutely amazing.
I think the thing that's going to benefit Kingston is the fact that his trainer's been doing more and more guest spots down at the Performance Center, Mike Quackenbush. And I feel like that's something that could eventually possibly lead to Kingston getting an opportunity to work as a trainer down at the Performance Center as well. If I'm not mistaken, they brought Kingston in for promo classes for the NXT kids before. And if you want to hire him as like a teacher coach kind of role, similar to what a Sarah Amato or a Serena Deeb is doing for the women down there, then I would be perfectly okay with that. And I would really make me happy to see King get an opportunity to make wrestling his full-time profession with the chance of helping to teach that next generation of NXT superstar.
I have no problem with that for him or for, anybody else. There's a lot of people, even within the bigger company, within the WWE itself, or any of the other, bigger companies, that's, a really respectable, way to transition and to wait. You have so many guys and girls and gals with so much, talent and passion, for the business. They should be, if that's what they want, the ones who are molding the next generation or even the people that they're working, with now. To have somebody like Kingston, involved in that is only beneficial for, whatever company that he's doing it for.
All right, we're going to take a quick musical break. When we come back, we start the review of Monday Night Raw for July 15th, 2019. We'll be right back here on the Raw Reaction on the Chairshot Radio Network.
Now get the guns, the drugs, from my generation, I'll take the fall. The saints, and across the nation, and it's a sin. The guns, the freaks, the fraud, the messer with me.
All right, mic check, 1, 2. How do I sound, Liz?
Good, very good.
Okay, you're much clearer as well. All right, let's get to it. This is Monday Night Raw for July 15th, 2019, and we open up the show with the Beast Incarnate and the Mouth Incarnate, Paul Heyman, coming out with Brock Lesnar to celebrate the fact that Brock is now once again the WWE champion. I mean, I don't love it, but I'm not against it. I understand why they're doing it. It's a ratings ploy, and I get that because with the ratings having dropped to the low levels that they have, Brock is a proven ratings draw. Anytime Brock is advertised for a show, the show does better ratings. So I get why they went back to Lesnar. It's an easy fix, especially as they come up on the quarter financials. It's just not a fix that the smart fan, the IWC fan, is going to care for because of our general displeasure with Brock's lack of availability, we'll go with.
Is it lack of availability? Lack of availability implies that he has so much else going on that they can't schedule him. Maybe lack of desire is a better term, or lack of.
Well, I mean,
I don't want.
In fairness, if I were going home to Rena Murrow every night, I think I would have a lack of desire to show up to work too.
You know what? I'm going to say something that's extremely unpopular. Do I love that he's champ again? No, not really. Because I find him slightly, you know, boring. Although the last few months, I feel that his personality has been like way, way better. For whatever reason, it's been great. I don't.
The Brock.
The last few months,
The Brock party.
Just with different things. Even before that, with a couple of different times, he was pretty entertaining. I don't hate him as much as other people do. The part-time thing where he was champ for so long, that was annoying because I am kind of old school where I prefer my champ to be there at least every other week. You know, I don't think they have to have a match every week. I don't think they need to defend the title every week. You know, I don't really care about that. I'm fairly old school. Like, once every 30 days is, like, more than enough for me, you know. But I think I didn't like it because it stretched so long. It doesn't bother me that somebody who's not there every week is champ. But I think he should be there more than he was, you know, if he is this time around. And if he is, I think it will go over, you know, a little better. So, interestingly enough, on the New York side of things, we got an ad for a show post-SummerSlam that listed Seth as champion. Now, it could be old, things change, who knows. I've never seen that ad, though, before. They just started airing it, and they specifically mentioned SummerSlam. So, who knows? Just an interesting tidbit I wanted to throw out there. It means nothing, but I wanted to throw it out there.
No, we've seen this kind of stuff happening in marketplaces where they're heading to as well. Apparently, the rumor is one of the advertisements that they've done up in Toronto recently was a casket match between The Undertaker and Drew McIntyre at SummerSlam. So, these kind of things come out during the course of advertising these shows. So it's entirely possible that could be a sign that Seth's taking the title back at SummerSlam anyway. Well, I guess that takes us directly into our main event here. There's no point in wasting it. How does Paul Heyman phrase this? It is a dual-branded 10-person all-star battle royal to determine the number one contender to the Universal Heavyweight Championship. Although in this universe, you're all Brock's bitches, I believe was the way that he phrased it.
That's what he's saying.
Baron Corbin, Braun Strowman, Randy Orton, Rey Mysterio, Cesaro, Big E, Roman Reigns, Lashley, Sami Zayn, and Seth Rollins. The match itself goes, let me get to the bottom of Larry's report here, because that's what I use for my format these days. The match goes approximately 7 minutes and 55 seconds, because Battle Royals, it happens. And not to mention, you can't have wrestling during commercial breaks. It's a no-no! Sorry.
That's okay.
That pisses me off more than anything about this whole new realignment in WWE, regardless. Seth Rollins picks up the win at 7:55, last eliminating Randy Orton. Once again, Big E has an impressive performance in the Battle Royal. I felt bad for Cesaro as he was the first one out and didn't really get to show a whole lot in the process. Overall, what did you think of the Battle Royal tonight to determine Brock's challenger at SummerSlam?
I honestly didn't like it. Well, it wasn't horrible. I didn't hate it. I always feel like I have to backtrack for a second. I don't know. I don't want to say it was sloppy. I guess it rushed since it had such little time, in my opinion, for a Battle Royal. I know it was supposed to be like fairly, you know, quick-paced, but for me, it was too little time for it. Some great spots. Big E picking up Braun. That was, I think, the spot of the moment of the whole match for me. That was pretty
yes.
cool. So I'm hoping for great things for Big E very soon. I'm saying so much as I try to think. But I wasn't thrilled with it. I didn't hate it, but I wasn't thrilled with it. I would have liked more time for it. And honestly, I wasn't thrilled with, can't believe the Seth fan girl that I am is saying this, wasn't thrilled with the outcome.
Is there somebody you would have preferred to Seth in this spot? The reason I say this is because Roman hasn't been anywhere near the main event picture since he came back. He's been involved in early to mid-card show matches. The Drew McIntyre matches were both good, even though I think that Drew
mm-hmm.
should have won at least one of them, if not both. But
mm-hmm.
Roman isn't somebody that's an established main eventer right now, so I don't think you could have had Roman win this. If there was one person that you could have picked other than Seth to win this, who would you have picked?
So, in the Lizzie land of what she would have wanted, I would have loved to see Cesaro, obviously, because I love him. And I think he's still very deserving, and everybody agrees that they don't do enough with him. I mean, the bar was great, and I missed the bar because I love both the guys. I was really hoping for either Cesaro or the ultimate, probably, long shot of Big E, which we knew was not going to happen. Also, but I would have loved that, and I definitely didn't want Ray to win because I have no use for him whatsoever. Also, an unpopular opinion. Sammy, I love, he was a long shot, but this is going to sound horrible, and I'm probably going to get a lot of hate for this. I really wanted Randy to win. Simply for the fact that I think, as dull and difficult as, you know, people say that, you know, Randy is, it would have been a little fresher. It would have been fresher with any of them. But out of anybody that actually had a chance of winning the match, Seth, Roman, Randy, I would have wanted it to be Randy because it would have changed things up a little bit. And you could have had, if Brock's not going to be around that much, you could have then had, you know, little mini feuds of people being, you know, annoyed that he won, you know, or whatever else, and like them fighting, you know, and different things. But now it's, again, for me, the same.
See, I think with the match at WrestleMania only getting a couple of minutes because of the timing issues with everything that they had to get onto the WrestleMania card, I think this is going to
mm-hmm.
be kind of a make-good for WrestleMania for Seth and Brock, and that's why I'm okay with it. They only went like 3 minutes and 30 seconds bell-to-bell at Mania. There was
yeah.
a pre-match attack. There was a pre-match attack by Lesnar, I will say that much. But they only went like 3.5 minutes bell-to-bell, so this is an opportunity
mm-hmm.
for them to have an actual match that Seth can win and establish himself as a legitimate main event force on Monday Night Raw, given the way that he's been treated as kind of a second fiddle to Becky Lynch over the course of the last month or so.
You know, my feelings on them not having the same old team doesn't have anything to do with the Becky thing. I think they're adorable together as a couple. I've never been one. And this is somebody who grew up watching, you know, Miss Elizabeth and Macho Man and all those type of couples, you know, the classic you know, couples and stuff. Excuse me. I'm so sorry. I have no use for some of these relationship storylines. Obviously, I don't think you need to be married to have a storyline together. And I think there's some that you can't get away from. But I don't think just because they're both champions and just because they're so popular that everything, at least, and especially like right now where their relationship more or less is Bailey knew, and that's a whole other topic I will not get on tangent on, so, which I could. It's just, like, ridiculous. For me, I'm not saying that the relationship is fake, you know, because they're shoving it down our throats. It's just, I don't think it adds anything to anything. I think they could have done the, you know, one or two off. They could have just did, like, an MMC with them, you know, whatever it's called, and had at it. But I don't think it adds anything to it. I think it actually kind of diminishes, you know, Seth a little bit. But my dislike of Seth winning again isn't because, okay, we're going to get bogged down more with, like, Seth and Becky. It's just that we've seen it for so long now. And there's been a lot of great parts of it. A lot of it's been, like, really, really good. And people are going to tear Brock apart and tear Seth apart and whatever, because that's what people do. But for the most part, I've really enjoyed it. But now I'm like, okay, it's SummerSlam. It's, you know, I think it's time you could freshen it up a little bit. And I get you, absolutely get your point about redemption for it. But you just had him lose yesterday. He could have had to work a little harder for it, in my opinion.
Well, if they would have timed out the amount of time that they had left for the Battle Royal, they probably would have had to work a little bit harder. There's only so much you can do in 8 minutes.
I don't mean it in that way. I don't mean it in one match. I mean in multiple.
Here's my issue about Seth and Becky. And I'll just say this real quick, and then we can move on, because there is other meat on the bone to get to here. God forbid those two break up anytime soon. This is going to look really, really bad on the network in hindsight.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's my biggest concern, is that you're wasting TV time on something that may or may not last. I don't see the necessity to put people's real-life relationships into storylines. If they are in a real relationship, I mean, I don't know if it's actually they're together, or if it's done solely for the publicity or any of that there. You know, it's just a case of, I understand the audience that they're appealing to towards this, because there is that soap opera audience that's going to be intrigued by this, and I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But as a wrestling fan who likes wrestling, I don't want to see Seth Rollins being treated as Becky Lynch's bitch.
I totally agree. I think society right now is very much, and it's part of the whole thing that Becky's been doing for months, is, you know, female power, girl power, you know, the whole I can do, you know, anything, you know, you can do and all that, and that's great. I'm all for it. I never liked relationships in, I guess because for me they were so overdone and they usually end up backfiring. I think it'll, like you said, it'll diminish, which is the word I was looking for, diminish his character, you know, in a way. I don't think it's going to do Seth any favors to make his girlfriend look tougher, you know, than him. I'm glad it's not the traditional storyline of, oh, somebody's, you know, like they were kind of doing with Naomi and Mandy, you know, in a sense, like, even though Mandy, you know, moving in on my man type of thing. I'm thrilled it's not that. But not knocking and not bringing their personal lives into it, you know, too much. From everything I've read and I followed, neither one of them has a very long shelf life, you know, for relationships. So I think it pushes them into, you know, the one, and I obviously wish it's completely different for them, you know, because like I said earlier, I think they're adorable together and they seem very happy. So I only completely wish them the best. But with two people who have been out there, especially Seth, with two pretty bitter breakups, the last one wasn't too bitter, but two, you know, his last girlfriend was extremely vocal, extremely active on, you know, social media. So, you know, I think, you know, and then the one before that and the whole, everything else, I absolutely agree with you. I think a breakup would affect Seth way more than it would affect Becky. And you kind of think that they would wait a while to see how it, you know, what's going. Unless there's more backstory that, of course, we have no right to know. It's not our business. Then ultimately really affecting how people view him.
So what you're saying is it's only a matter of time before they break up and then Becky posts a picture of Steph's ding-a-ling again.
Pretty much, yeah. No, I don't want them to break up. I hope they have a very long, happy 2 to 3, 5 years together.
All right, let's move on. Our opening contest, scheduled for one fall.
One fall.
They won't do the gimmick on this show, so I'm glad you will. Anyway,
Tony,
it is,
won't do it?
Technically, it's technically not scheduled for one fall because it's 2 out of 3 falls because no wrestling during commercials.
Anybody
really
got time for that?
I really saw people were joking about that.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I cut you off with Darren Young.
No, I was saying I realized that when people first started to say that, I realized that people were joking about that. You know, like, oh, Vince is so crazy. He doesn't, you know, whatever. I didn't realize it was actually a thing.
The one fall thing is definitely a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or are you referring to the no wrestling
no.
during commercials thing?
I know the one fall thing is a thing. We used to do it on the other thing. So, but no, the no wrestling during commercials is what I thought people were just like joking about.
No, that is 100% a real Vince interim. He has stated to the production staff that there is to be no wrestling action during commercial breaks, and they like air video packages and stuff in the arena during commercials.
That's so ridiculous.
It's to use a maybe slightly less than PC turn of phrase here, it's fucking
mm-hmm.
retarded. We can swear on the show, by the way, as a heads up. We're allowed to use our big boy and big girl words.
You probably shouldn't have told me that. Tony's, oh my God, she's nice thing is going to go out the window.
All right. This isn't Big Brother, so let's focus on the task at hand. All right, so Ricochet teams with the Usos to take on The Revival and Robert Roode because apparently The Revival needed a tag team partner for this match, and Elias is just too damn reliable. He's unrevivable. Easy for me to say. Anyway, the first fall goes to Ricochet over Dawson with the Recoil, his name for the Codebreaker, because we can't call it a Codebreaker anymore because Chris Jericho's all elite. The second fall goes to Dawson pinning, I want to say, Jimmy Uso. I can never tell them apart. With a flapjack. The third fall goes to the team of the Usos and Ricochet when Ricochet pins Roode with a 630 senton. Ricochet and the Usos win 2 falls to 1 in 10 minutes and 30 seconds shown. Post-match, it breaks down into a multi-person fracas. I just like using that word, fracas. When Carl Anderson, Luke Gallows, and AJ Styles arrive, and everybody beats up everybody, and it ends with AJ and the Good Brothers standing tall over Ricochet following a springboard phenomenal form, which absolutely obliterates Ricochet, and then a magic killer for shits and giggles, I guess, because it really wasn't necessary. Ricochet ate that phenomenal form. What did you think of the 6-man tag match, and then what were your thoughts on the post-match fracassing?
Okay, so when the match first started, I was like, why does this match not make any sense to me? Mainly because I'm like, how does Bobby/Robert fit into this? I get, you know, I'm very weird. I like to have my tag teams plus a random person make a tiny bit of set. I might have missed something with the whole Bobby/Robert revival thing, and I apologize that. That so it might make sense to other people. For me, it didn't. I enjoyed the match though because I like all the people. They're all pretty solid. I mean, everybody in that ring knows what they're doing and can put on a fabulous match. I think it was a fun match. I think there was a lot of spots, a lot of great, you know, not great, but a lot of, you know, moments that really kept it flowing. Excuse me. And the post-match stuff was great because I love a great random, not random, because they're always, they had that thing with Ricochet and everybody, but I love a great post-match beatdown.
So you're in favor of a post-match fracas?
Yes. Yes, I am.
I think it's an easy story to tell, too, with the club and AJ coming out to take advantage of a possibly weakened Ricochet. Ricochet was able to stand tall on the Revival, but then when it came to the numbers game with him against Styles, Anderson, and Gallows, he was clearly outmatched, and they took advantage of the situation. I'm okay with that there. It builds up Ricochet's resiliency. It gets more of a fan base behind Ricochet because they see him being double and triple teamed here. And you could actually hear people booing AJ Styles, which is something I never thought they were going to be able to accomplish again in the WWE.
You know, that's an excellent point, because I was going to say, one thing I really like about it and the reformation of the Bullet Club or whatnot, and the whole thing with AJ, going after Ricochet, you're kind of now seeing another dimension to AJ's, you know, another side to AJ's personality and what he could do. A lot of times over on SmackDown, you had him as the goody-goody, you know, family man, you know, type of thing. So it's nice to see him become a little grittier. I think he does really well with that.
Oh, shit, I just realized my microphone was muted. Sorry about that.
That's okay. I'd like to have your issue.
It's been a long, hot day here in Ohio. It's freaking early July, and it's like 90 degrees in Ohio. And I'm not comfortable in this weather, if I'm being entirely honest.
No, I am. I'm not either. I hate it. I don't do well in this weather.
Our next contest actually is scheduled for one fall.
One fall.
Okay, that'll be all. We'll only do it once or twice per show. Don't worry, everybody. We're not going to change the format around too much here. The Viking Raiders have yet another squash match over Jimmy and Johnny Boots and Tights, as Larry Zonka describes them. The match goes 1:20. Thor's Hammer, or as it's now known, the Viking Experience, finished Johnny Boots and Tights, because fuck if I could tell them apart. And the Viking Raiders are basically just beating up people. Where does this lead? Like, that's my question here. Where does this lead?
I don't know. I'm not the person to answer that question. Obviously, it was fairly random. I don't know if I view it as a step back. I don't know. That might sound harsh and uneducated, but...
No, I agree.
I just thought it was
because we were
random.
Yeah, we were starting to see them interact with the other teams on Raw, specifically Hawkins and Ryder, when Hawkins and Ryder were the tag team champions. And then out of nowhere, it's back to squashing jobbers.
Yeah, that's what really, you know, threw me off. And again, I must say, like, I had this moment of, okay, wait, I know I've watched the last few weeks, but, like, did I miss something? Maybe online or something like that. You know, that they would do with other stuff. You know, you do miss things, you know, here and there. But having them been so involved in, you know, fairly, you know, decent, important matches there, it didn't make any sense for them to now they have these big guys and you're just going to build them up by, you know, squashing people. I didn't know if there was a point to it.
Tony would be complaining about this because that's what Tony does. Tony hates squash matches, especially after you reach a certain point with people. And I understand where Tony's coming from here. So I take Tony's side of this argument here. Once you move past the original squash matches that the Minnesota Viking Raiders of Oakland were having, then you shouldn't be going back to them. Backstage, Drew McIntyre confronts Cedric Alexander about Gary the Goat, whatever his last name was, whatever. And challenges him to a match, telling Cedric that this is no laughing matter. Cedric actually gets a pretty good line in response, saying that maybe it is and that the joke will be on McIntyre. Their singles match goes 3:20. McIntyre goes for the reverse Alabama slam, which I believe would be a Georgia slam because they're basically the antithesis of Alabama. Would it be an Auburn slam? There's a college football reference that nobody's going to care about. Anyway, Cedric sits up out of it and into a victory roll for the pinfall to give Cedric Alexander a win. Kind of surprised to see Cedric pick up this win, but I'm not against it. I do think that this is going to end up with McIntyre absolutely decimating this poor kid, though.
Yeah. I was very I didn't mean to speak too quick. I was surprised, too, that, he won, but I kind of liked it as well because I would like to see the two of them have you know, a series of matches rather than a short argument and, a blow-off match, which there's nothing wrong with that type of stuff because it fills in the gap. But it would be nice to see Cedric go up against somebody like Drew, who I know is not like the top tier, you know, person. But both of them should be, you know, higher on the totem pole than they are, at least one of the totem poles. But he probably will end up getting decimated, the poor thing. But I think the two of them can put on some good matches that'll entertain us. So I'm all for it.
Finn Balor talks about losing the Intercontinental title to Shinsuke Nakamura and says tonight he will go through Samoa Joe to get back on track and back towards getting his title. Joe disagrees with this assessment and says that he's going to hand Balor another loss. I have hiccups, and it's kicking my ass. Roman Reigns says that this is his week after having won the ESPY for his comeback from leukemia earlier in the year. I can't deny I may not always have been the biggest fan of Roman Reigns, the character, but 100% deserved for Joseph Anna Wye, the person. And that he will win tonight's Battle Royal. We already discussed the Battle Royal. We don't need to get into it again. Our next contest is Finn Balor versus Samoa Joe, and Samoa Joe pins Finn Balor in a minute and 25 seconds because fuck you, NXT. This sounds like an insult as a fan of these two. Like, if I go to a show, like, sorry, just real quick here. If I go to a show and one of the advertised matches for that show that I'm going to, especially if it's a TV taping, is Finn Balor and Samoa Joe, I am absolutely salivating at the thought of that match. And they go 1 minute and 25 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I wasn't, I didn't mean to drop. I was just agreeing that it was really, really, it's one of those moments where you blink, like, and you think, okay, maybe the match will restart or something like that. Then it'll snap. Obviously, in a second, we'll get something that was pretty awesome. But it is an insult. It's a dream match for maybe dreams exaggerating, but it's a big match for a lot of people. The two of them have, you know, help my memory here. Have the two of them had a feud together? I don't think so. I could be wrong. Like a storyline, like.
On the main roster, not particularly on NXT, they feuded over the NXT Heavyweight Championship.
Yeah, that's what I said. No, you know, I meant on the main roster. So,
Nothing extended anyway.
Yeah, I would love to see it again, or at least like a really, I'd be down for one of those, oh, hey, you know, we have nothing to do tonight. Let's go out there and kill it like we used to toss type, you know, type things that they throw at us every once in a blue moon. But it was way too short for either one of them.
Post-match, Finn Balor gets his heat back by taking out Samoa Joe, first with the John Woo kick and then the top rope double stomp, the coup de grace. Balor celebrates with his Balor club, and the lights go out. Electrical outage? Negative. The return of Bray Wyatt as the Fiend from the Firefly Funhouse gimmicks. All right, so what was your thoughts on the Firefly Funhouse? Because we really haven't had a chance to discuss this mano a mano, I guess, technically.
Okay, so the Funhouse itself or tonight? The Funhouse stuff?
The Funhouse in general and then Bray's return.
Okay, so the Funhouse in general, I think the first night it aired, I think like many people, I was sitting there going, what the hell am I watching? Although with a stronger, more four-letter word that I will not say right now.
You can say it. I will say it. My first thought was,
okay.
What the fuck was that?
Yeah, I was talking to my friend Kimmy, as we do during Aurora, and I was like, what the fuck are we watching? She's like, I don't know.
Hi, Kimberly.
Like, is this... that's how we were. Just like millions of others. I think every wrestling fan watching the show at that time or the next day or 10 minutes later had that same reaction. But I guess because I'm weird and whatever, it quickly grew on me because one, I have a lot of small children in my life, so I watch those Barney type shows and have for years, not by myself, people with the children, you know. So I watch a lot of children shows. So seeing them mocked in such a dark, you know, evil sort of way was pretty fabulous. I think a lot of parents will feel that way, or aunts like I am. It quickly grew on me. I mean, we can't deny that it was one of the highlights of many, many Raws. And it got
pretty much
fairly quickly.
Pretty much the same concept as Tony and I, as far as your viewpoints there. The first week that it happened, both me and Tony were like, what the fuck is this? But then we quickly came around. Andrew was a day one adapter. Andrew loved it immediately, and I got to give Andrew credit for it. He was on board right from the start, and he ended up proving to be very correct in his assessment, because it ended up becoming one of the most consistently entertaining things that the WWE was doing on a week-in and week-out basis between the months of, like, May and July,
mm-hmm.
or May and April through June-ish. Overall, what did you think of Bray Wyatt's re-debut tonight?
So here's how stupid I am. I was going, what are they doing? I wasn't even thinking Bray. I will admit to being dumb or clueless or whatever. When the lights are going out, I'm like, oh, who's, maybe that's, you know, maybe it shows that they, you know, still can be a little, you know, get the fans, or, you know, whatever. I was like, oh, what's happening? Who's coming back? For some reason, I was not even, so sorry, not even thinking Bray. Not at all. His name didn't even pop into my head. It's like, oh, somebody's returning. And I pretty much was like, oh, my God, you know, this partly because I wasn't even thinking of him. And that's not a knock to anything he's been doing to build it up. It's not a knock to the, you know, Playhouse and anything. It's just that I honestly wasn't expecting him to come back yet for whatever reason. I kind of thought he'd be coming back at the next pay-per-view. So he wasn't in my brain at the moment, but I thought it was great. I think they did it really well. I liked how everything went off, like clicked off slowly. I love his new mask, so I'm pretty hyped for it.
I will say this much. If you have epilepsy, do not watch that segment, though. Because
don't watch what?
I'm minorly. If you have epilepsy, do not watch that segment. Because I'm minorly epileptic, and I could feel myself getting a little bit of the shakes during Wyatt's intro.
Yeah, I had to turn it off. Not turn it off, but I had to, like, kind of look away.
Just because of all the flashing lights and everything there. So,
mm-hmm.
a forewarning. They do a lot of visual effects for Wyatt's reintroduction. If you suffer from any kind of epileptic episode issues, be forewarned that it will happen during the course of that reintroduction.
Yeah.
All right. Poor Drake Maverick.
Oh, my God.
We're just going to tie all this into one segment here with him and Renee arriving at the hotel and R-Truth being there. Truth bribes the hotel clerk to find out what room they're in. A little bit later on in the show, Drake and Renee are about to consummate their marriage, to which Corey got in a really good lie that I think is going to fly over a lot of people's heads right before they came back from that break.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you caught it or not, but Corey's lie absolutely popped me. They showed Maverick getting ready in the hotel room before they went to commercial break, and Corey
mm-hmm.
had Corey's comment was something along the lines of, I have subscriptions that usually start up like this.
Stop.
He's on a TV PG show. He should not be saying.
Corey's just too fabulous.
But anyway, as they're about to consummate said marriage, Maverick decides to wear the 24/7 title in bed because, of course, he does. R-Truth comes out from underneath the champagne cart because, of course, he does. Maverick does kick out of the pinfall, but then R-Truth catches him with the most vicious finishing move in the history of professional wrestling. The crossbody block onto the hotel bed for the 3 count, and R-Truth is now a 10-time 24/7 champion. Where do you stand on the 24/7 title list?
I love it. I love it. I think I was one of the few. When Nick was out, it wasn't, you know, going over well. But and I think most of us had like the same reaction, like, what the heck are they talking about? But, you know, I think, because they really
Truth really, you know, took the ball and ran with it. It's I think it's one of the best things that they've done in a long time. It's hysterical. It's something that I definitely, as soon as somebody says, oh, there's something up, like I go, you know, look, like I have to see it, like, you know, right away. I think Drake and, I mean, Drake really made this his own too. I don't know if it's, and I don't really care to know what the plan was. Was it always the plan for like Truth and Drake to like, you know, go back and forth with it? Or was Drake like so into it, like actually making up those signs and everything on his own, you know, that, you know, they ran with it. And I think that's part of the fun of it, that some of the guys, you know, really just take it and, you know, go with it, and they see, you know, where it leads. But Truth and Drake have, and even Renee, she's been hysterical. I've actually find her more interesting than some of the women that are on regularly. I got a little, excuse me, people didn't like when I said that the other day, but it's true. I love it.
I could totally see Renee getting a contract out of this.
Mm-hmm. Her disdain
for everything Maverick has done has just been so fantastic, and not to mention she's definitely looked the part.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of looking the part, Mike Kanellis is back to play Maria's bitch.
God, do we even have to talk about it? Let's go over this very, very quickly because you do not want me to start you.
Mike is supposed to face Zack Ryder. Good for Zack getting television time. Good for him. Maria tries to take the match from Mike because apparently she feels even pregnant she could do a better job. Mike comes out, gets into the ring, the bell rings, and right as he gets into the ring and the bell rings, I say to myself, he's going to eat a Rough Ryder immediately, isn't he? Sure enough, one, two, the fuck out of here.
Oh, God. I don't.
Well, Mike, I have good news. I was going to tell Mike I have good news. I hear ROH is hiring, but he just signed a 5-year deal with the WWE again. So, yeah, he's fucked.
You know, is this storyline being done on... I don't always believe, like, rumors and crap that I read on there. I don't believe that it's some type of stupid storyline.
I do.
I mean, like, I kind of do, but I'm going to pretend that I don't, you know, because I don't want to. It goes back to my whole comment earlier on relationships, you know, on TV. Obviously, they're married. Obviously, it makes sense for them to work together, you know, on air and whatever. I hate it. I hate the whole, oh, she's pregnant, she has these crazy hormones, she's a shrew, this, that, and the other thing. I'm not a big Maria. I got, you know, people got really pissed off at me on Chair Shot a couple weeks ago when I was like, how is she relevant? You know, how is she even interesting? I don't find her interesting at all. You can hate on me all you want. I don't. I give her so much credit, absolutely so much credit for going to training, for working on it. I give her 1,000% every kudos she deserves for that because she's trying and whatever. And there has been improvement. I don't find her interesting at all. I really don't. I don't have one in-ring redeeming quality at all. And I think for me, it makes it worse because this whole shrewy woman thing, like yelling at your husband, you know, and that thing, I have no use for it whatsoever. Is it real life in some? Not well. You know what I mean? Other people like that? Yeah, absolutely. But I think it makes for awful, awful TV. And the thing is, they can't pull it off. And that's what makes it worse.
In regards to what us fans see in Maria, the obvious answer to that is we see the same girl that did Playboy a couple years ago because Merrick. Just saying. From a guy's perspective, Maria's fucking hot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no. Absolutely.
I don't...
And Mike's not a bad looking guy either. But that's not enough for me. Sorry.
I don't care for the storyline. I haven't cared for the storyline since the beginning. But I 100% believe that it is a punishment of sorts for Mike and Maria signing their contracts and then Maria having the revelation that she's pregnant once again.
Mm-hmm.
And this time they're going to get the money's worth out of them, despite the fact that Marie is pregnant, by having it shoved down their throats. By keeping them on television, keeping them on television and exploiting the situation that they find themselves in. I 100% would not put that past Vince.
And you know what? I don't blame him. I mean, everybody faults Vince for, like, breathing. You know what I mean? I said it not long ago. I said Vince can cure cancer and people would still hate him. Or world peace. Vince could bring about world peace. I said it on Twitter. Vince could bring about world peace and people would still shit on him. There's a ton to shit on the man for, absolutely. But whoever made the decision, be it Vince or somebody else or whatever, I don't blame them. I mean, it's a very, you know, stupid of them to do. Obviously, they were going to be, you know, found out. But my biggest problem with the storyline is that they do not have the acting skills to pull it off.
I think Marie is a better promo than people give her credit for. But this taming of the Shrew character that she's doing right now just doesn't fit her personality. She was much better as the happy-go-lucky, lovable idiot girl next door that she used to portray.
Yeah, that's exactly my point. Not everybody. Unless you're Meryl Streep, not everybody can pull off every character that they're given, you know? I'm not completely trashing her. She just... Ugh.
Six-person tag team match, one fall to a finish this time, as AJ Styles, Carl Anderson, and Luke Gallows take on the Lucha House Party, Kalisto, Gran Metalik, and Lince Dorado. If Andrew were here, he would say this episode of Raw automatically loses a point because of the Lucha House Party's existence.
Because they
hates Lucha House Party.
Oh, I was going to ask for clarification. Was it because they were on or because they lost?
No, just in general, the fact that they appeared on Raw to begin with.
How much hate am I going to get for agreeing with him?
None. You'll fill in perfectly for him.
Okay.
He is of the opinion that they should have stuck to 205 Live, therefore that he didn't have to deal with them.
Okay, so I don't agree with him exactly, because, you know, I think the whole gimmick or their shtick, whatever you want to call it, it doesn't do anything for me. For me, it borders on sheer stupidity in a sense. I get it, and I don't want to say it's stereotypical or anything like that, but I don't know. It just didn't click for me individually. I like all three men, all three of them. You can get a great match, more or less, out of any of them for the most part. Sometimes, but Grand being my favorite, but overall, yeah, I agree with him. I don't really think they, as a group, they add anything to anything. I mean, because you can compare them to New Day in a very, very small sense, and they have this almost silly gimmick, right? But there's the New Day obviously has advanced and grown and grown and grown and grown just on so many different levels. And there has been no growth of the three of them as a group whatsoever. So I'm with him completely that I think that they should just be on 205. I would rather see the Sting brothers on Raw.
I do like me some Stings, but as long as Ginger's not hurt, that's probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
And after all, is we do know my favorite game to play.
Do we?
Fling! That! Sing!
I'm not even talking. Oh, I have to talk. I was going to say I'm not even talking to you, but I don't have a choice.
All right, so Ricochet comes out and gets a little bit of revenge against AJ Styles here, jumping him at ringside. Eventually, the agents, including Adam Pearce, what's up, Scrap Daddy? Get Ricochet back to the back, and they restart the match after a commercial break because convenient that the Ricochet attack timed out with stupid fucking commercial break. Anyways, at the end of the match, we see AJ Styles tapping out Kalisto with a very, very mean-looking calf crusher as they use this to portray more of the mean, the nastier side of AJ Styles now that he is realigned with his good brothers and reformed the club here in the WWE. Mm-hmm. Overall, what did you think of the six-man tag match in general, not just specifically of LHP?
It was all right. It wasn't the worst six-man tag match I've seen. Some good moments. I really don't have anything too in-depth to say about it. It was a good match. It was solid. I enjoyed it. I can't go on and on endlessly about it, though, so I apologize. That's the best I can give to you on that match. The biggest thing I remember from it, and this probably says a lot, is that every time I see AJ standing next to Gallows, I go, wow, AJ's really short. That's my big takeaway from the match.
Well, in fairness, Gallows is like 6'8", so a lot of people would look short next to him.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, if that's what I really remember from the match, what do you want me to tell you?
At least this six-man tag combination made a lot more sense than the Revival and Robert Roode or the Usos and Ricochet.
Thousand times.
Quick promo from Seth backstage talking about the fact that he's going to fight everyone and anyone to get to Brock Lesnar and his Universal Heavyweight Championship. We now move on to a women's four-way elimination match. Number one contendership to Becky Lynch's Raw Women's title. And oh my God. Okay, so I've been jokingly making comments about the women's evolution here on the show because of the fact that recently on Monday Night Raw, and to a lesser extent on SmackDown as well, women's matches haven't exactly been getting a whole lot of time. Most of them have been running for 3 or 4 minutes, fitting inside of that commercial break window that they like to fit them inside of, and just basically going back to the old Divas matches times of old. After watching this particular match, I retract anything and everything that I said complaining about the fact that they were only getting 4 or 5 minutes at a time. Because this was fucking awful. The worst part of tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw, and I'm going to spoil it right here for my Greg Watchery. This was hot garbage. You can even hear a "this is awful" chant from the crowd towards the end of this contest. Liz, what did you think of the four-way elimination match?
Okay, so here's where I said this earlier. It's probably the spot where I'm going to get a lot of hate. I didn't really pay that much attention to it because I assumed Alexa was going to win. I was pleasantly surprised, I have to admit. I was pleasantly surprised that Natalya won. There were a couple little, you know, sneaky Alexa things that, you know, I enjoyed. I don't think it was complete, you know, hot garbage, but it definitely wasn't anywhere near, you know, match of the night. I mean, the squash match, you know, was ahead of it, in my opinion. And I know I sound harsh. I know I always sound, for people who know me, like, down on women's wrestling. And I'm not. I give them tons and tons and tons of credit. I certainly couldn't do it at all. But I just, I don't know. I don't know if it was the mix of people that was in it or what. It just, like I said, I was pleasantly surprised that Natalya won because I do love Natalya. But it wasn't anything that many of the women are capable of. It could have been a much better match.
Post-match, Becky and Natalya have a confrontation that actually comes off, I thought, pretty well for both ladies here. Becky cuts more of her promo about being the man and the fact that she's better at war than in love, to which Natalya says a couple of swear words, getting a couple of oohs and ahs, but does get off a decent line saying that she's not going to get the friend at SummerSlam. She's going to get the woman that's going to pull the horseshoe out of Becky's ass and take the women's title in her home country. I'm actually looking forward to Becky and Natalya. I think that they could have a strong match against each other. Hopefully, it's much better planned out than this four-way was, though.
I definitely think they can have a good match. I know Nat gets a lot of, you know, crap from people. You know, she's not this, you know, she's not that. I don't think she's as awful as this. It's just my opinion. As awful as many people want to make her out to be. I definitely can understand, you know, where they're coming from in certain ways that she moves. But I'm looking forward to it because it's something different. It freshens up things, you know, a little bit. I'm sure we're going to have Alexa back there, and I'm sure eventually we're going to get Alexa versus Nikki because Alexa can't keep a friend. But for me, it's freshening things up for the summer, and that's what I'm looking forward to.
Miss TV up next as Mrs. Guess is Dolph Ziggler, who got pinned in 17 seconds at Extreme Rules by Kevin Owens. You heard that correctly. Your audio did not glitch. He lost. Kick, wham, stunner, pinfall. Miz calls him out on that, and then Ziggler calls Miz out based on the fact that Miz is basically turning into everything Miz has said that he would never be. He's becoming a corporate kiss-out. He's becoming a shill. He's becoming a merchandise ploy, just like his wife. Miz attacks after the shot at Maryse, and eventually Ziggler rolls out of the ring and back up the ramp as Miz stands seething inside of the ring, and I feel like there are better uses of the Miz than a corded-sized dog Ziggler right now.
I mean, I didn't understand. I sound stupid when I keep saying that, but it just doesn't make any – it's so random for me. It's like, okay, here, we have something else to do. We need something else to do with Dolph because he's back now. And the last two things – I think there was two – the last two things, you know, fizzled out and didn't quite catch on. Well, let's have him feud with his best friend because we have a new season of a show to promote maybe. I don't know. It seemed to me super random and super out of the blue, which, of course, it's wrestling and TV. A lot of things come out of the blue. The two of them can probably give us something really good. Really good. I'm hoping they do. I like both guys. But I think it started off just a little bit weird.
I don't have anything against either participant as a worker. I just don't have any interest in Dolph Ziggler as a character right now because the dude has been dead in the water now since he came back and got and lost three matches in a row to Kofi Kingston right after he came back off the shelf. I'm not saying they should have made Dolph Ziggler the SmackDown champion or anything because they shouldn't have. But this isn't nearly the Dolph Ziggler that Dolph was back in 2013, 2014. This is a Dolph Ziggler that, in my opinion, is writing out his contract and seeing the writing on the wall for the end of his wrestling career, and he knows it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he has such a fairly decent, or even more than fairly decent, history with the company. I don't know. Was it the storyline? Is it him? Is he winding down? I know he does his comedy, you know, and stuff like that. Is he just writing out, you know, what's left of his contract? I don't know, and I'm assuming a lot of things, but he definitely is kind of the shell of what he used to be, and it could be many factors. It could be that we're just expecting more. It could be bad, you know, storylines. It could be there's so many factors that we can put so much of it on him and so much of it on other stuff, but they just seem to be like, okay, well, we have to have Dolph on air, and we're just going to put him here and, you know, like throwing, you know, something at Velcro and seeing if it sticks.
The proverbial crap against the wall kind of situation?
Yes.
Very well. We've already discussed the 24/7 finale where Truth pins Drake Maverick with the crossbody onto the hotel bed. We've already discussed the Battle Royal, thus bringing us to the end of this episode of Monday Night Raw. Much the same way we did for the pay-per-view to start the show, Liz, we're going to close with a final reaction for tonight's episode of Raw. You ready?
Yes.
Probably should have reminded you of this in advance so you're not looking for answers on the fly.
Yeah, that would have been, like, really, really helpful, but that's okay.
My bad. That one's on me, y'all.
That's okay.
I blamed a little Jimmy. That's who I blame. I'm looking for an Archer soundbite. I don't think I have one, which makes me a little sad, if I'm being honest. Oh, I don't have an Archer soundbite.
Damn!
That'll have to do. All right. Favorite match or moment tonight?
favorite match or moment. My favorite moment was the 24/7 stuff, followed very closely by Bray's with Bray's return. It's practically a tie, but those definitely the 24/7 stuff with, I think, everybody involved, down to the ref and whoever the heck was playing or really is a desk person there, was spot on. It was just great.
I'm going to go with Cedric Alexander and Drew McIntyre, even though I hope it's the beginning of something much, much more, and we're not just going to write this off as a 3.5 minutes thing. I think that you have an opportunity to use McIntyre to help establish Cedric with the casual fan and the IWC fan, the smart fan, the wrestling fan, the long-term fan that knows what Cedric's capable of, will be more than happy to see Cedric getting an opportunity in the upper mid-card over on Monday Night Raw. Elite. Greg Watry, least favorite match or moment?
Least favorite match or moment. Definitely make a case for the women's match, which we've torn that up enough, but I am actually going to go with the Viking squash match because I think it is unfortunately a step backwards for the Vikings of many names that don't really deserve it. I think they are a great team, two very solid guys who I think many of us were eager for them to start getting a push and be involved with. Just bit my lip, I apologize, with different things and kind of move up and start really contending for either set of titles, but now seems to, I'm afraid it's like almost being ready for like another repackaging of some sort with this, but we'll wait and see. But because I feel like it is a very sad and unfortunate failure,
I think they're in a holding pattern until Sarah Logan joins up as kind of a mouthpiece for them.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Because the rumors have been that Sarah Logan's going to be joining up with them with her real life husband Ray Rowe, and taking over as the mouthpiece for the Viking Raiders. And I think I'd be okay with that because as cool as it is seeing people go in there and destroy each other old school demolition style, eventually you have to move away from squashing jobbers and nearly screwing up your finish into more relevant things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with the women's four-way. I thought it sucked. Just awful. did not care. And I say this as somebody who is a huge fan of two of the women in that match and can tolerate Carmella most times.
Mm-hmm.
I love Natty. I love Alexa. I can tolerate Carmella most of the time. I don't care for Naomi. I never have. But three of the four women in that match, I'm at least okay with, if not a fan of. And, yeah, that was just awful. I'm sorry, ladies, but it was. Scale of 1 to 10, Liz.
7. Because it held my interest. You had a lot of good stuff. You had Drew and Cedric, like you've praised. You had Bray returning. You had, I know my pick for the best moment of the night might have been silly, but I needed that laugh, so I'm going with that. But then you had, I don't think it was hot garbage like so many Raws have been. You had the disappointment with Finn and Joe, but then it led into Bray, so maybe that played a factor into it. I don't think the Battle Royal got enough time, but the Battle Royal was good for what it was, even though I didn't agree with the outcome. So a nice, solid 7.
I'm a little bit lower than you at a 6.5. I overall enjoyed the show, but I think that there were little things with the way that it was handled, especially with the whole no wrestling and commercial thing, that definitely hurt the flow of the show, and therefore, in my opinion, hurt my overall enjoyment of the show as well. Who's your MVP for tonight, Liz?
Oh, my MVP for the night, I'm going to go with my MVP for the night. I don't know. I have to think for 2 seconds. Nobody really jumps out as being like so fabulous that they deserve the MVP for the night. I'm going to go. My MVP of the night is going to be the announced team, strictly for their reaction to my favorite moment of the night when they all came back and that shot of them just looking down and shocked. Those three of them are my MVPs of the night because for once I think they had a perfect reaction to something.
I harped on it earlier in regards to my favorite match or moment. I'm going to say it again here. This is the opportunity to make something with Cedric Alexander. Don't blow it.
Mm-hmm.
You could have somebody that you could very easily slide into the upper mid-card, lower main event scene on Monday Night Raw, and a guy that the fans are behind based on the in-ring quality that he has produced on 205 Live. Give him the opportunity to do so, and you won't be disappointed. My MVP for tonight is Cedric Alexander. That's going to wrap us up for tonight here. So, Liz, I want to thank you for joining us. Welcome to the team.
Thank you for having me.
Yay! Go team!
Woo, go team!
You've officially joined our dysfunctional little family. We wish Andrew the best while he is handling endeavors outside of the WWE for a while. Hopefully he's able to rejoin us once he has a chance to recharge his batteries and deal with all things New Japan. For the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero, and the co-hostess with the mostest, Miss Liz Puglisi, I'm Harry Broadhurst, thanking you for listening to the Raw Reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network. We'll see you again next Monday night as we get closer and closer to SummerSlam here on the Raw Reaction, a presentation of the Chairshot Radio Network online at thechairshot.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next Monday night.
Tragic play. Only curtains remain to fall. There's no reason left to stay in this play. We move backwards against the wall. Conversation's over. Communication's dead.
You have been listening to the Raw Reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network. Join us again next Monday night at 11:30 p.m. Eastern as Harry Broadhurst, Tony Acero, and Liz Puglisi present The Raw Reaction, a presentation of the Chairshot Radio Network, available online at thechairshot.com.